Good morning, West Michigan, and welcome to the Grand Rapids Daily. Today is Wednesday, and I'm your host, A. And I'm B. Thanks for starting your morning with us. Before we get into today's news, we have to talk about this weather, because we are in for a significant shift today.
That's right. If you're stepping out the door right now, it's still a bit crisp. We are sitting at exactly 50 degrees under clear skies in Grand Rapids, though it feels a touch cooler, right around 49.
Don't let that chilly morning air fool you, though. We are officially in meteorological summer, and today is going to prove it. We're looking at a major warm-up as the day progresses.
Absolutely. By noon today, we'll be up to 54 degrees, still with those clear skies. But the real heat kicks in this afternoon. By 3 o'clock, we're jumping to 67 degrees, and by 6 p.m., we'll hit our high of 80 degrees, with some scattered clouds moving in.
80 degrees in early June is definitely on the warmer side, but it aligns with the long-range forecast we've been seeing. Meteorologists are predicting a warmer-than-normal summer for the entire Great Lakes region, and this early June heat wave is just the beginning.
It really is. As we move into the evening, those scattered clouds will turn into a full overcast sky by 9 p.m., keeping the temperatures pretty warm overnight. We'll only drop down to the mid-60s by tomorrow morning.
So if you have outdoor plans, garden maintenance, or just want to enjoy the sunshine, today is a fantastic day for it. Just be mindful of that afternoon heat, and maybe keep an eye on your water usage, as these early dry stretches can be tough on lawns and gardens.
Great advice. All right, we've got a packed show for you today. We'll be diving into a major debate at the city council regarding downtown zoning laws, and looking at how Kent County is reshaping its emergency response with a $5 million investment in mental health teams. Let's get started.
Let's get into our first major story today. The Grand Rapids City Council is currently locked in a pretty intense debate over a new proposal that would significantly overhaul zoning laws for downtown commercial spaces.
Right, and this is a conversation that has been brewing for a while now. The core of this proposal is aimed at relaxing the current, somewhat rigid zoning ordinances to allow for more mixed-use developments without requiring developers to jump through the traditional, lengthy special permit processes. Essentially, the city is trying to make it easier to blend residential units right on top of or adjacent to ground floor retail and commercial spaces in the Central Business District.
And the motivation here is pretty clear. Ever since the pandemic shifted the landscape of downtown office work, we've seen a noticeable dip in foot traffic during the daytime. The city's economic development team presented some stark numbers at Tuesday's meeting, noting that the vacancy rate for ground floor commercial spaces in the downtown core is currently hovering around 15%. By making it easier to build residential units, they're hoping to create a built-in customer base for these struggling storefronts.
Exactly. Proponents of the measure, including Mayor Rosalind Bliss and several prominent downtown business associations, argue that increasing urban density is the only sustainable path forward. They're pointing to cities like Austin and Minneapolis that have relaxed zoning laws and seen a resurgence in downtown vitality. The argument is that if people live right above a bakery or a local bookstore, those businesses don't have to rely solely on the 9-to-5 office crowd to survive.
But as with any major zoning change, there is significant pushback. The debate at the council meeting got fairly heated when it came to the potential unintended consequences. Critics, including several neighborhood associations bordering the downtown area, are raising red flags about gentrification and the displacement of legacy businesses.
Yeah, that was a major point of contention. The concern is that if you suddenly make these commercial buildings highly attractive to residential developers, the property values and subsequent property taxes will skyrocket. A local hardware store or a long-standing family-owned restaurant might find themselves priced out of their lease when a developer decides they want to buy the building, gut the upper floors for luxury apartments, and hike the ground floor rent.
Another layer to the zoning debate is the issue of parking minimums. Currently, developers have to provide a set number of parking spots per residential unit, which is incredibly expensive downtown. The new proposal would actually eliminate those parking minimums for these specific mixed-use zones. The city's argument is that we need to encourage public transit and walkability, and forcing developers to build massive concrete parking decks just drives up the cost of the housing.
But you can imagine how that went over with the existing business owners. They're arguing that if you bring in hundreds of new residents without dedicated parking, those residents are going to take up all the street parking, leaving nowhere for retail customers to park. It's a valid concern, especially considering we just covered the city's $5 million overhaul of downtown parking meters a couple of weeks ago. The parking ecosystem downtown is already in a state of flux.
Exactly. The Chamber of Commerce actually released a statement yesterday supporting the zoning changes, but asking for a compromise on the parking issue. Perhaps a reduced parking minimum rather than eliminating it entirely. One of the council members also proposed adding an amendment that would require a certain percentage of any newly developed residential units in these rezoned areas to be designated as affordable housing.
Which makes sense on paper, but the developers' lobbying group immediately pushed back on that, stating that the profit margins on retrofitting older commercial buildings for residential use are already razor thin due to modern building codes and fire safety requirements. They argue that mandatory affordable housing quotas might actually stall development entirely, leaving those storefronts vacant anyway.
It's a classic urban planning challenge. You need the density to support the businesses, but building the density risks pricing out the very businesses and residents you're trying to support. The council didn't reach a final vote on the proposal yet. They've decided to open up a 30-day public comment period to gather more feedback from business owners and residents before making a final decision.
And that public comment period is going to be crucial. If you live or work downtown, this is definitely the time to make your voice heard, because the outcome of this vote will likely shape the physical and economic landscape of downtown Grand Rapids for the next couple of decades. We'll definitely be keeping a close eye on how this develops over the next month. Moving on to our second deep dive today, we're looking at a major development in local health care and public safety. The Kent County Board of Commissioners unanimously approved a $5 million funding package yesterday, specifically earmarked for creating what they're calling co-response units.
Right, and for those who might not be familiar with the term, a co-response unit pairs a trained law enforcement officer with a licensed mental health professional. So when a 911 call comes in that is clearly related to a behavioral health crisis rather than a standard criminal incident, this specialized team is dispatched instead of or alongside a traditional police response.
The data driving this decision is pretty compelling. During the commissioner's meeting, the county sheriff presented a report showing that over the past 2 years, approximately 30% of all emergency calls in Kent County had some underlying mental health or substance abuse component. Traditional police officers have repeatedly stated that they often feel ill-equipped to handle these specific types of crises. They're trained for law enforcement, not psychiatric de-escalation.
Exactly. And relying on traditional law enforcement for these calls often leads to one of two outcomes. The individual in crisis ends up in the county jail, or they end up in a hospital emergency room. Neither of those environments is designed to provide long-term mental health care, and it creates a massive strain on both the criminal justice system and the local health care infrastructure.
The $5 million will be drawn from a mix of the county's general fund and remaining federal pandemic relief dollars. It's going to cover the hiring and training of 12 new mental health clinicians who will be embedded directly within the sheriff's department and several participating local police departments across the county.
One thing that stood out in the county's proposal was the specific type of training these clinicians will need. They aren't just looking for standard therapists. They need people trained in acute crisis de-escalation.
Absolutely. The sheriff mentioned that they are modeling this program after similar successful initiatives in other states. The clinicians will undergo an additional 4 weeks of tactical safety training with law enforcement so they understand how to operate safely in unpredictable environments.
And it's important to note that these co-response units won't be sent to calls involving weapons or immediate violent threats. Dispatchers are getting specialized training too, so they can accurately triage these calls. If a caller reports someone in a mental health crisis but mentions a firearm, a traditional armed police response will still be the primary dispatch.
Right. The safety of the clinicians is paramount. But for the vast majority of these calls, welfare checks, public disturbances related to mental illness, substance abuse crises, these specialized teams are exactly what's needed. It's about sending the right tool for the job. It also covers the cost of specialized, unmarked vehicles for these teams,
Arriving in a standard police cruiser with lights and sirens can often escalate the anxiety of someone experiencing a severe depressive crisis. The goal is to make the response feel more like a medical intervention.
But there are some logistical hurdles they have to figure out before this fully launches. One of the biggest challenges discussed was the ongoing shortage of mental health professionals nationwide. Finding 12 qualified, licensed clinicians willing to ride along on potentially volatile emergency calls is not going to be easy, especially given the competitive salaries they can command in private practice.
The county is hoping to offset that by offering highly competitive benefits packages and framing this as a critical public service role. They're also partnering with the social work programs at Grand Valley State University and Calvin University to try and build a pipeline of graduates who might be interested in this specific type of crisis intervention work.
The rollout is scheduled to happen in phases. They are targeting a launch for the first three pilot co-response teams by early October, focusing initially on the districts that historically have the highest volume of mental health-related 911 calls. If the data shows a successful reduction in arrests and ER admissions over the first 6 months, they plan to deploy the remaining teams countywide by next spring.
It's a proactive approach that a lot of community advocates have been demanding for years. While $5 million is a substantial initial investment, the long-term hope is that this program will actually save the county money by reducing the revolving door of jail bookings and emergency room visits. The commissioners acknowledge that if this is successful, they will need to find a permanent funding mechanism by 2028, when the federal pandemic relief funds are fully exhausted. It's an ambitious program, and one that could really change the dynamic of public safety in Kent County.
All right, that covers our main deep dives for today. But as always, there is a lot more happening around West Michigan.
Yeah, let's hit a few more local stories real quick in our daily roundup.
First up, the Grand Rapids Public Museum has officially announced their new marquee summer exhibit, which will focus extensively on local indigenous history and culture. The exhibit opens next Friday and will feature hundreds of artifacts, many of which have never been on public display before. It's a fantastic educational opportunity for families while the kids are out of school. If you're planning to travel this weekend, take note. MDOT is warning drivers of significant lane closures on US 131 northbound starting late Friday night. Crews will be performing essential bridge repairs near the Wealthy Street exit. Expect major detours, and be sure to add some extra buffer time if you're heading through downtown this weekend. In entertainment news, the Frederick Meyer Gardens and Sculpture Park has finally dropped the lineup for their highly anticipated summer concert series. Tickets go on sale to the general public early next week. With several Grammy-winning artists on the roster this year, you'll want to act fast because these shows almost always sell out within hours. And finally, the Kent County Animal Shelter is waiving all adoption fees this coming weekend due to a severe overcrowding situation at their facility.
They are currently operating at maximum capacity, with dozens of dogs and cats needing immediate homes. If you've been thinking about adding a pet to your family, this weekend is the perfect time to head over there.
And that is going to wrap things up for us today on the Grand Rapids Daily. Thank you so much for tuning in and starting your morning with us.
We appreciate you being here. We'll be back tomorrow with more news, deeper dives, and everything you need to know about what's happening right here in West Michigan.
Stay cool out there today as those temperatures climb, and we will catch you next time.